Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Hawaiian Legacy Reforestation Initiative.
This is your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from Paso Robles, California, out on Adelaide Road. We're here at Tobless Creek Vineyard with Robert Haas, the owner and founder. Hi, Robert.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing great. What a joy and what a pleasure to come visit you. Tell us why you chose to site your property and vines here.
Well, when we started looking, we were partners with our friends, the Perrins of Château de Beaucastel, and our model was Châteauneuf du Pape. And so therefore, we were looking for climate and soils that were as similar as possible to what we would find in the Southern Rhone. And we actually sort of tracked around where Zinfandel had been grown in California, because that was the closest grape to what we thought we were planting. And we were also looking for Mediterranean signs, olive trees, rosemary. And of course, above all, we wanted high pH soil, chalky soils. And after doing a lot of searching around California, north and south, and west also, and east, we ended up here in Paso Robles and bought the property in 1989.
Let's start at the center core, the beginning, and that has to do with Rhone and Rhone-style wines. Number one, for the listener, what defines a Rhone wine? It's a bunch of varietals, isn't it?
Right. Yes, it is. There, I forget the number, but it's 30 or so, as I believe. But we limited ourselves to the better known ones, except for Châteauneuf du Pape, where we brought in originally Mourvèdre, Grenache, Syrah, Counoise, which are the grapes that we still use here for our blends. And subsequently, we brought in the rest of the 13 varieties. I didn't mention the whites that we brought in originally either. That's Roussanne, Grenache Blanc, Marsanne Viognier, Picpoul Blanc, but we brought in the material.
So all your rootstock came from France then?
The rootstock and the vinifera, the scions. And we brought them into the United States through the USDA. At the time, California, the USDA station was closed because Austin Goheen, who had been running the import program in Davis, had retired and nobody had been nominated yet to take his place. Mm-hmm. So we actually brought the material in through Geneva, New York, the USDA station there. We started importing in 1990, but the system there, or in the USDA, it's a three-year program to get the material in. If you bring in, let's say, 12 cuttings of a particular individual clone, then they graft it, they take half of them and plant them in pots, put them in quarantine, and they graft the other half to vines that are susceptible to the viruses that they're looking to avoid.
So the time, it's purely a quarantine issue then?
Mm-hmm. Yes, and what happens then is they go through two growing seasons, and if at the end of the second growing season no virus has appeared on the indicator vine, then they release what they put in quarantine. Mm-hmm. So you end up with a couple of pots of each individual. Then you have to start multiplying. So we started bringing material in 1990, and we got our first increased block, which would be growing vines large enough to graft into the ground outside in 1995, and our first grafted material into the vineyard in 1997.
So it all grew from the little puppies that were imported then?
Actually, yeah, it's pretty amazing. I mean, there's about 2 acres here of those increased blocks, and now there's about to be 120 acres of all the little babies that came from the vines, yeah.
That's pretty cool. That's amazing.
Yeah. You know, it's a great place to be. We love it out here. Mm-hmm. We're delighted with what we're seeing. When we moved here, there wasn't a single Rhone variety planted in all the appellation of Paso Robles. Gary Everly had planted some back in the 80s, but couldn't sell it, so he ripped it out. When we came here, there were 17 wineries. And there are now 240-some-odd.
So when you planted the Rhones, you were almost it then, right?
We were just about it, yeah. But now I think not in acreage and not necessarily in volume, but in the number of wineries that produce Rhone varieties and Rhone blends, that's more of that than there is of any other either Bordeaux blends or straight Cabernet.
You could have done grapes from Bordeaux and pulled it off here too, right?
Yeah, except that we were partnering with our friends from Châteauneuf du Pape, and we already had a model.
Well, that's exactly where I was going, is the real reason why you decided to go with Rhone's in addition to your partnership must have been something in your heart that you really liked Rhone wines, or you wouldn't have done it, correct?
Oh, yeah. Well, it always kind of astonished me. I started representing California wineries in my import marketing company back in the early 70s. And that we represented Chapelet and Fremark Abbey and Clos de Val and Phelps when they were just starting. And what always amazed me was that there were absolutely no Rhone varieties being grown and planted in what we saw in Napa. Mm-hmm. Although there, I think there probably had been in the past. Certainly Grenache had been a major grape at the turn of the century. Bordeaux and, well, Cabernet and Chardonnay had pretty much taken over.
Let's talk about your Rhones that you produce. And let's start with your most signature blend, Rhone, that people first associate and think of when they think of Topless Creek.
Okay. Well, our signature blend is called Esprit de Beaucastel, Spirit of Beaucastel. And it is Mourvedre, Grenache, Syrah, and Cunoise. With a Mourvedre being in the 50-40%, let's say, range, and followed by Grenache and Syrah about equal, and Cunoise maybe 5%. And then the white, again, Esprit de Beaucastel, and that is basically Roussanne, the majority, and then followed by Grenache and a grape called a Pique Poule Blanc.
And I imagine the ratios might vary slightly year to year, depending upon what you get?
Absolutely. I mean, we take what nature gives us and pick out the best of it for the Esprit wines. But there's a real level of high quality all through the lots that come out of the vineyard. It's a really great growing area. It's really, really amazing how well everything comes out, whether you have an early harvest or a late harvest. It's a joy to work in the area.
I know this is a generalization, but try and give us a word picture of your signature blend, of what taste, expression, alcohols, you know, what is the experience going to be like?
Definitely a Southern Rhone-style blend. The fact that it's led with Mourvedre, there's a certain meaty character, plummy character to it. The Grenache, you get sort of a cherry and a ripeness, juiciness on the palate. Syrah gives you some spice, tannin, and a peppery kind of character. And the Cunoise is a raspberry character. So they all get together. It's a wine that is built to age, but that tastes quite good young as well.
So when you walk out the door with a bottle, it's very drinkable.
Yes, absolutely. Although if you like older wines and you like the maturity, softness that you get with a few years of age, it lends itself to that as well.
So if you're a patient soul and you can park it for a while, well worth the wait is what you're saying.
Yeah. We recently opened a magnum of a 2005 Esprit, and it was absolutely, absolutely delicious.
You also do single varietals, don't you?
Yes, we do. We do Mourvedre, Grenache, Syrah, and we do Roussanne, and we do Grenache Blanc. Those grapes in single varieties in most years, but it depends on the quantity and quality of the harvest, whether or not we end up with the wines in the blend or whether we make single varieties. In a year like 2009, for instance, where we were really slugged with early frost, we only made 14,000 cases. In 2007, I think we only made 12,000, whereas normally, we expect to make closer to 20,000 from our own vineyards.
You are all 100% estate-grown grapes, so you know what you're getting when it comes in the back door. Let's talk a little bit about the process inside the winery. I notice that you have very large wine barrels.
They're called foudre, the large ones in French, or foudre, F-U-D-E-R in German. Or here, you just call them casks, I guess. But they're 1,200 gallons, and that's what we use for aging our red wine.
And you were saying earlier that the reason you prefer that has to do with the ratio of oak to your liquid and not getting too over-oaked, correct?
Yes. We think that the varieties that we're growing, with the possible exception of Syrah in some cases, are not enhanced by a lot of oak. So we follow the Southern Rhone tradition and age in large oak barrels. As I said, 1,200 gallons, which would be the equivalent of about 500 cases per barrel.
And how critical is your yeast selection specifically in your processing?
Well, it's all native. We don't add any yeast, so no selection to be done. It's there.
That's fairly rare. A lot of people aren't willing to take that risk, and yet I can tell by your confidence that you don't have any fear about using native yeast fermentation.
We did at the beginning. We were worried, but that was the tradition we were following as our book is still a model. Mm-hmm. They use native yeast. We started out in the very first year. The wines, they took a little longer to start fermenting than they do now, but they started on their own and fermented just fine, and we have had no problems. I know that if you go to oenology school, one of the first things they warn against is don't use native yeast, but there we are.
Yeah.
But we're trying to express a feeling of our terroir or the location in which we're grown and its effect on the grapes, on the vines. Using native yeast, again, means that we don't import strains from a different variety of yeast from what is actually here.
Very fascinating. I love that. So, again, following that line of thinking of your model, from what I gather, is a very much a traditional kind of old school way of making wine. Tell us other attributes, other ways that expresses itself in the winery.
Sometimes I call our wines California wines with a French education. Old school, yes, from the standpoint of add as little or subtract as little as you possibly can. Try to take the grapes off the vines with enough acid so you don't have to add any. Don't get overripe grapes. Get ripe grapes. And express the terroir in the blends, which is, I guess, that is the European tradition.
And talk about alcohols for a moment. Do they tend to be on the gentler or lighter side?
Well, I mean, I think we run around 14% to 14.5%, which is not high by a lot of California wines, what you see these days. We try to get grapes when they're ripe. We don't try and let them get overripe. We do not try to get a huge amount of extraction. There's plenty of extraction just naturally, and we don't force it.
And punch downs, pump overs?
We do punch down, pump over, compressed air bubbling through the must, which is probably the most gentle way to do it. It depends on the grape. It depends on when it comes in. It depends on, it's a lot-by-lot decision.
Standard protocol to bottle age for X amount of time for a typical wine or no?
Well, if the market lets us.
So it's all demand. If you're out and they want it, they're clamoring, you release it.
Yeah, that's right.
But perfect world, you would bottle lay it down for a while.
We would like to leave it maybe at least 3 months before we send it out. Mm-hmm. And mostly we do accomplish that. But after 2009, that really short crop, how long we leave it in the bottle in the cellar before we send it out, well, if the market's really yelling, we'll send it out.
Let's go back to the big picture. You were on the vanguard in Rhone-style wines on the Central Coast. Rhones have really taken off on the Central Coast. There are a lot of guys doing it now. Do you think that the Central Coast will earn its place as an exceptional, outstanding Rhone-growing region?
Yes, I do. I think it's an outstanding growing region for a lot of grapes. I mean, I think that, you know, Cabernet is a very good grape here in Paso Robles. We're just in another camp at this point. I think Rhones are a very logical addition to the California portfolio of wines. Mm-hmm. It's a nice change from just Cabernet or just Chardonnay to have the less oaky, rich wines with a maybe more approachable than Cabernet when they're young and not oaky as Chardonnay in the case of the whites. It's just another choice, and I think that they'll take their place alongside Cabernet and Chardonnay in the California hierarchy of wines. Our model here is moderate alcohols, to, as I said before, to harvest grapes when they're ripe, but not when they're overripe, mm-hmm. and to age them in large oak so that we're not getting a lot of new oak on the wines.
And again, primarily a neutral oak.
Yes, primarily neutral.
Before we go, I know you're too modest to do this on your own, but talk to us a little bit about the plaques out from Wine Spectator Awards. That's pretty cool stuff.
We've been in the top 100. We've been in it three separate times and two separate wines. It's nice to be honored by the press and to be recognized. We feel enough about it to put up a plaque, But we don't make wines for scores. I mean, we make wines for taste. And if we get the scores, that's great. You know, we certainly don't object, and we don't at all mind publicizing it or being publicized. But we've been lucky enough to be favored by a lot of the most accepted and most respected press. And we like it.
I wish I could spend all afternoon with you, but we're running out of time. Before we go, for further information, somebody wanted to come visit your tasting room, and number two, a website.
Okay, well, the website is tablascreek.com. You know, all lowercase and no spaces. The location you can get from our website, just about on the corner of Adelaide Road and Vineyard Drive. So if you come out Vineyard Drive from the south and cross 46, you get to, and when it ends on Adelaide Road, take a sharp left, and we're there about 200 yards down the road on the left. If you're coming from town, you can come out Nacimiento Lake Drive and then Adelaide Road. Eventually you get to us at 9339.
Robert Haas, the owner and founder of Tablas Creek Vineyard, thank you so much. What a joy. What a pleasure.
Thank you, Tom. Enjoy being here.
Me too. This is great.
Funding for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Hawaiian Legacy Reforestation Initiative.
Hawaiian Legacy Hardwoods and Four Seasons Resort invite you to sponsor a legacy tree and contribute to the biodiversity of Hawaii. Legacy trees can honor an individual, commemorate an event, or memorialize a loved one. Every tree dedication is a living legacy and a gift which grows grander year after year. The best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is now.
The Hawaiian Legacy Reforestation Initiative was recently awarded the prestigious Phoenix Award by the Society of American Travel Writers. HLRI was one of four recipients of the prestigious award that recognizes international organizations actively involved in conservation, preservation, beautification, and anti-pollution campaigns that further the growth and appeal of travel destinations.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show, Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a weekly featured podcast on NPR.org, produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. Our San Francisco-based associate producer is Molly Blaisdell, covering the San Francisco Bay Area, the island of Maui, and the South Pacific. Our Wisconsin-based associate producer is Julie Henning,